I say all this to say, I like to replicate that those scenarios when it comes to climbing, because like climbing for 30 minutes to an hour is something that probably should be like trained. If you've never done a 1 hour climb or a 1 hour effort, and then you go to Crusher and do a 1 hour climb, it might be a little shock to the system.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 88 of the Matchbox Podcast powered by Ignition Coach Co. I'm your host, Adam Sabin. On this week's show, we're talking about some of the semantics that make up the build phase of your training, as well as how to appropriately structure your tempo training to match your race goals. Today's show is also brought to you by Flow Formulas. Get on top of your nutrition game now by heading over to flowformulas.com and make sure to use the discount code MATCHBOX when checking out. As always, if you like what you hear, please share this with your friends and leave us a five-star review. And if you have any questions for the show, you can drop us an email at matchboxpod@gmail.com with email titled The Matchbox Podcast, or you can head over to ignitioncoachco.com and fill out the Matchbox Podcast listener question form. All right, let's get into it. Okay, first question this week comes in from Jesse. Jesse wants to know, what is the exact definition, if there even is one, of a build block? What is being built here? FTP, chronic training load, something else? How would this be different than a traditional threshold block or VO2 max block? Thanks, Jesse.
I like that. What's being built here? That's pretty funny. Your fitness, Jesse. We're building your fitness, man. I don't know. That's probably just language. You know what I mean? Like we say base, build, race.
Yeah.
It's just language that somebody came up with, you know? I don't know if it necessarily... And I bet depending on what coach you talk to, it probably looks different. And it depends on the, it probably depends on the coach and what the athlete is training for.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like that whole build phase is going to look different depending on what you're building towards. If I'm building towards unbound, the build phase is going to be a lot of volume. But if somebody's building towards cross country mountain biking, it's going to be a lot of repetitive high intensity stuff. So, I mean, I think it's just building toward your race goals. And then right after that is the race, like the race period.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to say is, you know, like I, other than the race aspect of it, I feel like it, I don't know, it kind of comes from, what you like I relate it to like building structures of like building a house or building a skyscraper where it's like the base is your foundation. The bigger your base can be, the broader, landscape or, you know, area of all, you know, you have to build from. So, and then the build is like this, the walls. It's like, you're like laying the foundation during the base period, then you're building the walls and this, the walls and the structure kind of gives the formation of the building. Like until you see the walls going up, it's hard to visualize like where you're going with it. And then the race is kind of like just the finishing touches. So maybe some of your like, interior and exterior design. But until you have that building block of the walls, like it's hard to imagine where you're even going. And that's really what you want here. You want like your base fitness is like the least specific, most generic training. You're just building your aerobic capacity. And then it's the build phase, like you're talking about here, where it gets more specific. It's not getting totally race specific yet because there are certain facets of your fitness profile that you have to build in order to like bolster your overall fitness profile, but it is going to get more specific and it will depend on what your race goals are. And the build is usually going to be like the hardest block of all of them. The race specific stuff is like when you kind of start tapering off a little bit, you know, it's going to get more specific to the race. Like you might have some hard workouts, but it's not going to be like every week's not going to be hard. The build this phase is like where you're probably going to have the highest TSS, maybe some of your highest volume training, some of your hardest workouts is going to all come during the build phase. And yeah, it really just does depend. Like you might, your build phase might include a threshold block or it might include a VO2 max block or it might include both of those depending on where you're, what you're building towards. You know, so that those, like those terms are kind of just related to like what type of work you're doing, but the building phase is really when you're kind of bolstering your overall fitness.
I would agree with that. I think I kind of use it more so as coaching jargon. I use it a lot for different things, but I think the most important thing is that you have a coach that is explaining it to you, mm-hmm. and what capacity that they mean. I think I've used it as, okay, we're going to do a tempo build. Now we're going to do a threshold build, but within that, which that really would be more of a, I guess what you would consider a meso cycle in a larger training cycle. I guess that would be the official term and what I'm referring to as a build. But within that, I've said, okay, within this threshold build, we're going to do a 3-week build, but that just, you know, have used that synonymous with 3-week load, 1-week deload, or 3-week on, 1-week off. So I think it can get thrown around a lot, but I think the more widely accepted definition is what you've said, Adam, there's base and then there's build and then there's race.
Yeah. And some of this gets like, you know, like training peaks, like if you're building your annual training plan, ATP in training peaks, it's going to reference some of these terms. It's going to reference base. It's going to reference build. It's going to reference race phase. And like some athletes get really caught up in that, like that, you know, they'll see that the transition in the calendar goes from base to build, or, you know, they're in build one versus build two. And I try to not let my athletes get too caught up in the nuances of that, because really it's like I use that as kind of like a guideline in a sense, but it's not something that I adhere super strictly to. Like if something gets thrown off track a little bit, it's not like I'm going to like completely upend everything and be like, or like, you know, discount something. Cause I'm like, oh, well, we're in the build two phase. Like we can't be doing that right now. You know, mm-hmm. It's like the build two phase is just kind of there to let you know, like where you're at, reference wise in their overall, you know, periodization of your like calendar year. But it like, if base two doesn't align to the exact type of work that we were doing last year at this time, that's okay. Like, you know, if base two, we're going back and doing some, or I mean, build two, we're going back and doing some base two work. That's okay. Like it can bounce around a little bit. I kind of just use that as like, okay, if we're in base two, that tells me we're probably still 8 to 12 weeks out from our event. You know, it's just kind of there as like a reference.
Yeah, that's how I use it too. Like Training Peaks has the whole annual training plan thing, and maybe people use that like as a strict framework. I use it as a loose framework just to keep me on track. Cause like when I first became a coach, I made the mistake of like not using it. And then next thing you know, like we are only like 1 or 2 months out from a athlete's A race and we're still doing tempo. And I'm like, oh snap. Like I knew the base was supposed to take a long time, but I've kind of taken too long on the base season. And now we have to like rush through some higher intensity stuff to prep for racing. So I started using that annual training plan in Training Peaks as a way to keep me on track for each athlete. Cause like, I mean, obviously coaches have more than one athlete. So like the more athletes a coach has, it's like they're juggling all these things. So it's hard to keep track of where each athlete's A race is, and it's easy to get maybe behind on that. And so the annual training plan thing and Training Peaks helps me to stay on track. So it's like, yeah, if it says build one or build two, that doesn't necessarily mean like, oh, he's doing over unders this month. It just means, oh, we need to start prepping for like race specific workouts.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else to add there?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Caitlin must be in her race phase, because if the race phase is like putting on the final touches, she's got drywall patches in her background. So she's in the race. She's doing the final touches. Joke.
Okay. Next question here. This is a gear related question. And this one actually came in for me, but I want to answer this one because I think it's, I'll explain it after I read it here. So this one comes from Kim. Kim says, good afternoon. One, this question is for Adam regarding my ideal migration gravel race setup. My off-road bike is a custom titanium bike, and he sends a picture there. I can run maximum 38 chainring up front with a 10 to 46 tooth cassette in the rear. I'd like to know some thoughts on this gearing to cope with the variety of terrain. For context, let's say I'm Cat 2 Fitness with sound off-road experience and a preference to spin. And then question two, I can fit up to 2.4 tires. I do love my 2.2 Race Kings, but should I go with something larger that is also fast? I don't care if this doesn't make the podcast, but I'd rather get good feedback from Adam. So the reason I put this on the podcast is because I think I like that Kim is reaching out to someone who's has experience with the race. I think it's really important when you're doing homework for an event that there's not a lot of information on. And in Migration Gravel, there's not a lot of information on. Like when I was doing my homework for the race, it was very difficult to find information. And I've actually had probably four or five people that have reached out specifically to me because they saw that I raced the event last year. They've either listened to the podcast or they know of Ignition Coaching or somehow they looked up and found out that I was a coach. And they've reached out just asking for advice on equipment setups and, you know, different coaching or training tips. And I just think there's a lot of value in doing that extra homework because you can't always find the information that you need just by looking for it online or like watching videos. Like sometimes you really want to have that firsthand experience and, you know, advice that comes from that. So that's why I wanted to read this here. And I'll give, I already actually sent Kim a response with some tips, but, I told Kim that I'd read on the air too. But I think it's important for people to know that don't be afraid. If you can't find the information you need, try and reach out to someone who's done the race, has the experience, whether that's a coach, maybe, you know, like a lot of times with Ignition, with the process that we have for connecting athletes with coaches, we try to connect the athletes with a coach that has experience in either their A race or one of their priority races. And I think that goes a long ways versus just reaching out to any general coach out there. Like a general coach is going to get you good fitness, but when it comes time for some of the more race specific nuanced details of preparation, it's really helpful to work with a coach that understands what you're prepping for. You know, they've done the race, they've done the race multiple times. So like I get a lot of athletes that I connect with who are interested or going to be racing Leadville because I've done the race. I've done Leadville many times and I've got a lot of experience with the race. And I think there's just a lot of value in working with a coach that has the similar experience to what you're prepping for. So that's why I wanted to bring this up here. I will give Kim some advice here. Anyone else that's listening who is going to be doing Migration Gravel, it's super hard. It's not a gravel race. It's definitely more of a mountain bike race. So you need to prepare for that. I think Kim's on the right track here with picking. You guys didn't see the bike, but it's basically a drop bar hardtail, which that's what I rode last year. So I would definitely recommend that's like an awesome platform. Kim's bike doesn't have any suspension. I would definitely recommend front suspension for this race. Even if you're running a gravel bike, like some of the people that I've talked to only have access to a gravel bike. I'm like, if you can get even just a gravel suspension fork, spring for that because it's going to be worth it. So Kim, if you can put a mountain bike fork on there with like 100 mil travel, that would be sweet. I would run, if you can only fit a 46 tooth cassette, I would definitely run smaller than a 38 chain ring if you want to spin up the hills, because I had a 38 by 50 last year and I was grinding away at sometimes. So I'd probably go with like a 32 or maybe 34 cassette or chain ring with that 46 cassette. And then 2.2 Race Kings, that's the tires that I rode, and they were awesome. So I would definitely just recommend keeping those on there. Gives you a little bit of extra clearance for mud, things like that, which there was no shortage of mud. It was like crazy, crazy mud at times. So yeah, that's kind of my two cents there. But anyone out there who has more questions about migration, feel free to reach out to me, and I'd be happy to share some experience.
Do you plan to go back?
Definitely bring a camera. I will not be going back. Not that I wouldn't want to, like I would love to go back and do it again, but it's a huge undertaking, time-wise, financially, energy-wise. Like I was wrecked for a week afterwards. Luckily I took a week long break afterwards, so it worked out fine, but yeah, it was just like, it's such a huge investment all around that like, if I'm going to go through that investment again, I'd probably rather just go get a different experience. I think last week we talked about that race that was in Morocco
like, stage race. Yeah.
You know, I'd rather like go check that out, you know, kind of been there, done that. I would definitely do something else next time. Not that, yeah, the race was cool. Awesome experience. Definitely got everything and more that I was hoping to get out of it, but I just don't need that same experience again.
Did you see any lions?
Fair.
Like wild lions?
Not while we were riding. We did do a safari tour the last day. So this was like in actual like land cruisers. So, you know, safari vehicles. We did see some lions there. During the race, like in the wild while I was riding, probably the most predatorial animal that I saw was like I rode through a pack of hyenas. Like literally.
That's
like,
what I was about to say.
They hyenas. Were like on both sides of me. Like I rode through it. Luckily, there was a dude on a moto behind me. And I like looked back when I was like catching up to the pack of hyenas. I looked back and I was like, what do I do? And he's like, send it. Just keep going. I was like, all right. This guy's got my back, hopefully. Let's see. We saw hippos are super dangerous. You got to watch out for those. Like, luckily, they're usually around the watering holes. So you just like don't go near the water's edge if there's going to be hippos in there. We saw lots of giraffe, lots of zebra, lots of like gazelles and those kind of like deer type animals. Trying to think of what else.
Sounds like you were riding through the Pride Lands, like the opening scene of The Lion King, and Adam's so, just riding yeah, his so, bike through
so
that.
The first,
sounds awesome.
So, yeah, so when I so I did two separate races out there. The first one was called Safari Gravel. That was a one-day race. And we rode through the national park that The Lion King movie is like based on. Like they have Pride Rock there and like, yeah, so that was super
Pride wild. Rock is a real thing.
It's like, I mean, it's like that's what they based modeled off of. It off of. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I just added that to my bucket list. Go to Pride Rock.
Yeah.
I had no idea. That's awesome.
So then, and then, yeah, and then the 4-day stage race goes through a wildlife refuge. Like it's, you're in, it's the Masai Mara. It's like it's the Kenyan side of the Serengeti Desert National, like High Desert National Forest Wildlife Refugee Area. So yeah, I mean, you're just like in the wild with all these animals. We saw elephants too. Did ride by some elephants, rhinos. Yeah, it's crazy.
Crocodiles.
Super cool. Somewhat terrifying.
I didn't see any crocs, but the place that we stayed the first and the last night, there's like a river down like below where we were staying, and supposedly that was like infested with crocodiles.
Wait, weren't you just telling me about how you and your wife almost got eaten by crocodiles?
Yeah, that was a different trip. That was in Costa Rica, a different trip like 10 different years ago. Trip. Yeah.
That was you. Man, look at
that
you.
That was me.
You're just like a safari animal.
Peter went over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
to be
nuts.
Fair, we didn't know that the estuary that we were walking across had crocodiles everywhere in it. So had we gotten eaten by crocodiles, it would have been by accident for sure.
Well, I'm glad you didn't. Nice.
Okay.
That sounds epic.
Yeah. Okay, so this one comes in from Kyle. We got another question here. This one, so they say long question, which actually is not that long. We get some really long questions, Kyle. So this one's kind of on the medium side. I have a question for race-specific intensity when training for mountain stages or climbing-focused races. Specifically, I'm training for Crusher and the Tusher. I wish we had Dylan on because he's done Crusher. This will be my first race, but I'm an avid amateur who is currently training 15 to 20 hours a week. Wow. It's a lot of training for your first race. I'm in the base training phase and trying to decide whether or not to change up my scheduled intensity workouts every now and then. Instead of doing the tempo workouts Dylan has in his base plans, would it be worthwhile to do multiple ascents at sweet spot up a climb I live by approximately 1 hour? Would the training stress outweigh the benefits? Is it better to stick to abbreviated intervals like 3x30-minute tempo? I want to increase my confidence in tackling long climbs all day, so that's why shorter sweet spot / tempo efforts concern me. Thanks, Kyle. Hopefully we'll see you guys at Sea Otter and or Crusher in the Tusher. Drew, you'll be at Sea Otter. Are you going to Crusher too?
Probably not. I was on the fence about it for a long while. I think I'm gonna skip Crusher and Leadville because I hate altitude.
It's fair. You're both.
If I had to pick between Crusher and Leadville, I think I would go to Crusher because it's a little lower and I don't know. Seems a little bit more like a road race, which would maybe be better than Leadville for me at least. But yeah, I don't think I am.
I'll be there. Blaine will be racing.
Oh, sweet.
You'll be a Crusher?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. Is Blaine doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yep.
I've never done Crusher, but from what I've seen, I actually feel like Leadville plays out more like a road race than Crusher, just because the Crusher is so climbing intensive. Like, you're either climbing descending.
When I think of road racing, I think of climbing. The climbing at Crusher is what intrigues me about it.
Gotcha. Okay.
I don't know if I'm that good at climbing. Like, I'm not Pete Stettin a level climber, but I'd like to think that I'm decent at climbing.
Okay.
But I don't think I'm good at climbing at altitude, so that's why I'm not going.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when it finishes with a mountaintop climb at 9,000 feet or whatever. Yeah. 10,000 feet. So Kyle's question here is, like, should, you know, Kyle's prepping for Crusher, which is going to have hour plus long climbs in it. Kyle wants to know, like, why is he doing abbreviated work? So, like, you know, 3x20 tempo, 3x30 tempo, instead of just like going out and doing 90 minutes straight of tempo up a climb, or 60. He says he's got a climb that's 60 minutes.
I think he could. Maybe not every workout, but that's something that I like to do. If I go down to, I'll go down to Tennessee, and that's where, you know, I can get some sustained climbing. And there's a climb that's down there that's an hour to an hour and a half, depending on where you turn around, really. And I will do, if I'm down there and the terrain is there, then that's what I would do. But around where I live, I don't have those sustained climbs. So that's when I'll usually break it up into chunks just for, I think the reason we break it up into chunks is like more mental than it is physiological. Cause like if you break it up into chunks, like 10 minute or 15 or 20 minute, whatever it is, I think with those little breaks in between, yeah, you are recovering and like lactate is coming down and all of that. But I mean, if you're doing tempo intervals, you could do like a 2 or 3 hour tempo interval straight through if you really needed to, but you'd be pretty fried after that. So maybe if you add in these little recovery periods, it gives you like a mental break. And then in the grand scheme of things, you end up doing more tempo because of the little breaks. But I think it's good to replicate, replicate race scenarios. And so one of the big races that I always try to train for is BWR California, which ends with a big climb. I think it's like a 30 to 45 minute climb at the end of that race. And so what I'll do is I'll do like a lot of climbing, and that race has a lot of climbing even before that final climb. So I'll do a ride where I do a lot of climbing, and I just let the climbs kind of dictate the when I start and end my intervals. And this would be like on an intensity day, not an endurance day. So like I would go into this ride thinking this is a workout, but I just let the terrain dictate the effort. And so when I start the climb, I'll do like a tempo, kind of like tempo sweet spot, something that I know won't totally fry me, and because I'm going to be replicating the race. So I'm going to be riding for like, you know, 4 or 5 hours or longer. And so I don't want to like blow my wad on the first interval. So on every climb, I'll do that. And then at the very end of my ride, on like maybe the last climb that I'll do, I'll try to replicate that climb at BWR and go like even harder on that last climb. And so I say all this to say, I like to replicate that those scenarios when it comes to climbing, because like climbing for 30 minutes to an hour is something that probably should be like trained. If you've never done a 1 hour climb or a 1 hour effort, and then you go to Crusher and do a 1 hour climb, it might be a little shock to the system.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm guessing Kyle doesn't say where they live, but I'm guessing if Kyle lives somewhere where they've got an hour long climb, one thing that people forget about when you have climbs that are that long is you actually are changing in altitude a lot. Like an hour long climb means you're probably climbing 2,500, 3,000 feet, sometimes like that, you know? So you might go from 4,000 feet of elevation to 7,000 feet of elevation. And you kind of want to know how to pace that too, because it's going to get harder at the top, not just because you're an hour in, but also because you're that much higher in elevation. So I do see value in doing that as well, just so you can understand the pacing strategy a little bit more and what the effects of the longer climb is going to have on you. Some people might find it doesn't affect them as much because it's such a gradual increase, but I'm pretty sensitive to altitude too. So when I get to the top of a 7,000 foot climb, it feels a lot different than when I was at the base down at 3,000 or 4,000. I will say though, you know, part of why I'm guessing, I mean, this isn't my plan, this is Dylan's plan, so I'm extrapolating a little bit here, but part of why Dylan probably lays it out at, you know, 2x20, 2x30, 3x30, is most people probably aren't training for a race that's going to have an hour plus long climbs in it. So it just makes the plans that he sells a little bit more general. So, you know, and it's sometimes easier to accommodate. Like, not everyone has the time to be able to go out and train or do a workout that's going to have a 90-minute tempo effort in it. You know, that means you're probably going to have to ride for 2.5 hours. You know, so sometimes it's like if you give them 2 to 3 by 30 minutes, it's like, well, if they only have time to get two of those in, then they just get two of those in. Versus when you see like a 1 by 60 or 1 by 75 or 1 by 90, like it's kind of daunting. So I would guess Dylan's just probably just generalizing it a little bit, but I think he would probably agree with what you're saying, Drew, is like, you know, if you can turn that into a little bit more specific, there's probably no downside to that. And tempo is kind of the unique here, in which you don't, like you mentioned, like you don't need to break it up like you do the other zones. You know, like you can do a really long tempo effort if you wanted to or if you needed to. But it's just, yeah, it just makes it a little bit easier to stomach when you do break it up. So I would say I would kind of echo what you guys are saying. But I wouldn't do that for anything above tempo. Like if it says 3 by 15 threshold, I wouldn't just go try and do a 45-minute threshold effort. That's not going to be the same. The reason we break up those efforts into intervals is because you can get more out of yourself when it's chunked into a smaller segment. So, you know, if you're doing 10 minutes of threshold, you're going to be able to hit a higher power output than if it's a 20-minute threshold or 30-minute threshold effort. Like you might be able to equal, or you might be able to spend that time in zone, but can you spend that time at the upper end of your zone? Like that's what you're going to get out of the, like, you know, truncated or abbreviated sets. Or you can spend more time in zone, you know, like doing a 1 by 45-minute threshold effort. That's probably all you're going to get out of yourself for that day. But you could do 6 by 10-minute threshold efforts and probably spend all 60 minutes in threshold. So you're going to get more time in zone that way. So that's part of why we break it down for the anything that's threshold or higher.
If I were coaching this guy, I would have him do, I'd probably have him do this workout maybe twice before the race. If Crusher's in the middle of July, maybe he does it at the end of May and sometime in the middle of June as like, and this would literally just, the title of the workout would be like Crusher Simulation. And it would be, he would go out and like pretty much out the door, like however long it takes him to get to that climb. Hopefully it's close. Because I think from what I've heard, Crusher starts with an hour climb. You ride for a little bit and then it ends with an hour climb or something roughly that.
Pretty much, yeah. So like two major climbs.
Yeah. So I'd have him go and do that climb, the hour long climb at probably like high tempo, sweet spot, kind of low threshold, you know, below FTP, but like kind of pushing the pace. Ride for, I don't know, an hour, hour and a half, however long that little, I'd say probably an hour and a half or something like that. And then go back to that climb and do it again. Cause now you're 2.5, 3 hours into the ride. You're probably like, your legs are pretty fatigued, but like knowing how that climb's going to feel with that fatigue in your legs is going to be huge for the race. And if you've already done that twice before Crusher, it's like almost like desensitization. It's like you've already done that effort twice, so you kind of know what to expect and you can pace it even better because you like you have more experience with that exact effort. Yeah, and then on the second time up the climb, you would, I don't want to necessarily say like empty the tank, but maybe empty the tank to try and like simulate the race. Yeah,
that's what you do. Yep.
But that's a hard workout. That's like you're looking at probably 2 or 3 days to recover after that because it's long and it's going to be a lot of stress, like 2 1-hour climbs and one ride, and the ride's probably 4+ hours. So that would be a tough one for sure. I would do it maybe at the end of a block or something, like when you know you've got extra time to recover from it. So
yeah, and I would say this is for all the everyone else out there. You know, Kyle's got access to an hour long climb, but you don't need the exact terrain to simulate what your race day effort's going to be like. And I would focus more on what the effort is than what the terrain is anyways. So, you know, if you don't have that hour long climb or an hour and a half long climb, go out and try and ride the flats at the same effort level. Visualize yourself. Like I did this for Leadville, where I visualize myself on the first climb and I go out and do a 20 or 25 minute, like, you know, hard tempo effort. And then I visualize myself on the Columbine climb halfway through and I do an hour long tempo effort. Like I do I don't do 7 or 8 hours. Like I'll kind of chunk that down into like 5 hours, but I'll do like a 5 hour workout where like I'm visualizing myself. I'm doing an hour long tempo effort in the middle of the ride. And I'm trying to like imagine myself where I'm at on the course. And I think this is really important. I think a lot of people get this wrong, where they don't put themselves in the actual course when they're doing their training and visualizing like where, you know, what that effort's going to feel like, what it's going to look like, how you're going to take in your nutrition during that. So even if you don't have the access to that terrain, I think like trying to simulate the efforts is really important. So, and I say simulate the efforts because I see this a mistake a lot of people make where they're training for a race like Leadville or Crusher, and they're like, they see, oh, Crusher's got 10,000 feet of elevation gain in 70 miles. So they just go out and smash like 2 minute long hill repeats for like 2 hours, trying to like, okay, I'm going to accumulate as much elevation gain as I can. And it's like, that's just completely opposite of what the actual effort level is going to be like. So don't do that. Like try and simulate the effort level and let the terrain be what it is. Like, that's why you have gears on your bike, because when you're going uphill, you just use your gears. You know, like you can still go hard on the flats, even though you're not in the same gear and your bike's not at the same angle. Like, you know, try and simulate the effort.
I thought you were going to say, like, you could do this on the trainer and you just grab a couple of textbooks and put them under your front wheel. You know, like we totally used to do that. I mean, I used to do that. I was simulating climbing, I would grab my whatever textbook in high school, put three of them under my, and I'm like sitting in my basement with my front wheel, like a foot off the ground. Yeah. It's like,
yeah,
same exact.
I mean, they do make my front. They do make those.
Oh yeah. The thing that goes that up and down. You can,
yeah. Like you could do that. If you're not a person who's averse to the trainer, then I'd say, yeah, you could do that. You know, like upload a course to the trainer that's going to be Crusher and the Tusher and go rip it. But I don't think that's necessary. I wouldn't do that.
Outside, so, that sounds miserable.
Yeah. Especially
climbing, because you're out of the saddle so much climbing, and like being able to rock your bike like that is, you can't really do that on the trainer. I guess you can nowadays. They have all these crazy trainer technologies. I'd rather just go climb though.
Yeah. All right, Kaylin, anything else to add?
As you're doing, I really like the idea of the simulation rides and doing a couple of those, because the more experience you have, you know, dialing in your nutrition and your mental game for those climbs that are going to be brutal there, the better. But when it comes to race day, I don't know where you live, Kyle, but altitude is definitely a factor at Crusher. So don't be so hung up on the numbers that you're seeing in those simulation and try and hit those, because that could be a recipe for disaster depending on where you live. So I think for a lot of people, altitude, you know, some people say, you know, it doesn't really affect me until I'm into tempo. So I don't know where I'm going with that, but it's like zone 2 is fine for, do you know where,
like, it's like the harder you go, the more you feel the altitude. Yeah. I totally agree with that.
I do think now, if you're comfortable blocking those tempo or sweet spot intervals back to back, I think, you know, having longer durations at lower intensity now is good. More so specific to what you are going to be doing there.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm someone who gets a little impatient when I'm doing tempo workouts. So I almost always end up like just sandwiching it all together and doing an hour and a half long tempo effort just because I don't know. It's like I get 20 or 30 minutes in and I'm like, I don't need a break right now. I can just keep doing this, you know? So like, and it's really just about, it's just about spending time in zone.
You hard man. Wow.
I just
erased my recovery. Look at how strong you are.
I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying, like, I think it's okay with tempo. Like, this is the one, the one zone where
I agree.
I think it's okay to do that and you can get away with it. And especially if it's going to be more specific to your race, then And you know, when you're doing a 90 minute tempo effort, you're not going to be able to push low threshold because it's just too long. So like it almost in a sense forces you to like hit the middle of the zone and not override your tempo ride. So kind of like Caitlin, like you're talking about, like you know, getting used to kind of just riding that fine line between like, you know, you're above endurance, you're going harder than endurance, but you're not going so hard that you're like going into threshold. You know,
I would absolutely be the doofus that tries to hold his sea level numbers at altitude. Probably another reason I shouldn't do Crusher. I would absolutely make that mistake.
I could see that. All right, cool. Thanks, guys. I think that's going to wrap it here.
See ya.
All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in for the latest episode of the Matchbox Podcast. Like I said at the beginning, you can send any questions or topic suggestions to matchboxpod@gmail.com with email titled The Matchbox Podcast. Links to each of our social media pages can be found in the show notes. Tune in next week for another endurance training-related discussion and learn more about how you can find that extra match for your next big event. Catch y'all soon. Let's go!
Ready to start working with a coach that'll make you faster? It's easy. Just go to the Ignition Coach Co. website and fill out our athlete form, and we'll connect you to the best suited coach for the job. You'll jump on a free consultation, determine if it's a good fit, and determine a start date. If you don't feel the vibes with that coach, well then no sweat. We'll connect you to another coach that might be better. And then it's off to the races, or at least off to the training for the races. Don't wait any longer. Sign up today.